Thanks, Denishe. So Stephanie and I will be sort of piggybacking on each other throughout this next piece, this next talk. And I wanted to start by talking about how we go about or might go about bringing iRest into the world, like different places you might be teaching. Might be a studio, might be, I know some people work out of offices, go to places of business where they might offer classes, hospitals, all those kind of places. The sky's the limit. And this day and age, a lot of people are also offering live classes online. We're doing private classes as well, online or in person. So you could be teaching classes, workshops, you might be doing introductory talks. There's the way, if we're teaching classes, you could be teaching drop-in classes. I taught drop-in classes at the Yoga Tree here in Seattle for many, many years and hope to again sometime in the future. But we can be teaching a drop-in class. We could be teaching like a series, like multiple classes, introductory classes, workshops, like half day, whole weekend kind of workshops. We can be doing like presentations, like in a hospital or a VA center. I've done presentations for multiple big local businesses here in Seattle that asked me to come and talk a little bit and guide a practice for a group. I've worked, been called into veterinary hospitals, as they often have to do like different kinds of self-care and continuing education. So I've been involved in doing things like that. So, sky's the limit here on different ways that you can offer. One of the things that I think about, especially if I'm teaching a series, it's wonderful because I have a group, a set group for a set amount of time, can really go through and like build the framework and dive into the inner resource. And I think as Stephanie was mentioning the other day, like maybe diving into emotions, maybe the third or fourth class of the series. So you really taken the time to develop a familiarity with the practice, maybe more comfort with the students and welcoming and establishing the inner resource. When I teach drop-in classes, often, a lot of regulars, but then there might be the day where someone new comes in. And so I'm really mindful of the audience and making sure that it's going to be approachable for who's there. And I find that my drop-in classes were, I kind of called them iRest light because it was mostly just noting emotions, noting cognitions. I mean, definitely attending to them, but more noting, more weaving in the inner resource and not like today we're diving into pain, So again, making it just as approachable as possible. It's can be really helpful to have themes, even for drop-in classes. For years and years, as I taught a drop-in class, I would always have like I would often start the first month of the year, the whole month was the Sankalpa and diving into that. And then the next month might be something else, and then something else, and something else. So, really helpful for to have a theme and then making sure you can adjust the theme for who's in the audience. Lots and lots of different IRS workshops as well, things that you can think of that you want to bring forward on your own personal flavor. One of the workshops that I love to teach is like the map of meditation and really taking like a whole weekend to feel into that. And so you find what lights you up, go from there. Yeah. I'll hand it over to you, Stephanie.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about group dynamics, what can happen in classes, ethics around teaching more specifically, like considering like what are we doing in class, why are we doing it, things like that. So I'm smiling at my list that I have here.
I'm realizing that part of that list is mine. I forgot.
That's okay. You know what, Jennifer? Why don't I just roll with, you want to take the first little bit and then I'll hop in after?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we're, as Stephanie mentioned, going into more about the group dynamics of what can arise during a class. And there's these ground rules that we can abide by for creating safety in the room and safety with the group. And you know, all those really important agreements, like that we all agree to hold confidentiality, you know, anything that we hear here that, you know, if we're sharing anything about it, we're not using people's names, or we're more sharing like our felt sense of what happened instead of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe so-and-so said, did that. I turn it in. I go, oh my gosh, when that happened, this is what I felt, you know, bringing it back. Important to arrive on time as the teacher. Really important to end on time. And because people often are, you know, they might have childcare, there's things, work they have to get back to. So really honoring people's time. Just knowing where the bathrooms are if you're teaching in a studio or something like that, where the bathrooms are, where the water is. What time the next break is going to be. And often when we meet in groups like this in person, we have name tags too, because there might be that little bit of like, oh my gosh, I know that person told me their name and now I can't remember. And so now there's this whole thing that's happening. So we can find a little bit more ease socially if we're wearing name tags. And also I've been in trainings where I was an assistant and I noticed someone in there without a name tag and it turned out they weren't part of the class, you know? So it's just helpful, especially with larger groups. Yeah, what we can do to help create that container of safety. When I'm in teaching in the studio, as I would at the Yoga Tree, I would make sure the doors were locked and I would let the students know. You know, if I wouldn't lock them right away. Usually there's someone who's got caught in traffic or something, but at least by the time that we're going into the practice, I get up, I lock the door, make it safe. Yeah. Over to you, Stephanie.
Thanks, Jennifer. 10-4. So I was going to speak a little bit about leadership challenges that can happen when we're teaching just by nature of group dynamics. And, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that when groups form, especially if you have a closed group, that there may be an emerging leader that rises up in the group that's really healthy and natural. And we want to call on them. We want to acknowledge them. You know, we don't have to identify here's the leader of this group, but, you know, just calling on them, not overly than other people, but just acknowledging them, acknowledging what they're sharing. I mean, we would do that for others as well. But, you know, so I want to acknowledge that there's natural leaders where it happens naturally and it's not a problem. But there can also be people that challenge your leadership of a group. You know, if you haven't had this in a group yet, you're lucky. It, because the more that we teach, inevitably, it's kind of like anything, right? It's just a matter of time and just the nature of how many people we might teach. And so, you know, you can start by asking the person, what is it that's really needing to be seen? Or what is it that's really needing to be heard? Or what is it that they're wanting? Now, when we ask this of someone, we need to realize that we may not be able to give them what they want. And so we might have to talk to them after class and let them know. And the other thing is we might have to Speak with somebody privately after class to set appropriate boundaries. Remember, that's also going to be keeping the group safe. And that's part of our ethical responsibility as teachers, right? So if somebody's deeply challenging and challenging us and it's derailing the group, we might have to talk to them after class. And it may or may not work for them to continue in class. We'll see. It's again, these don't happen a lot, but I think it's important for us to talk about this so we're all prepared as much as possible. You can always get mentoring if you're finding that you're having a challenging student. Then we could also have those students that fall into a lot of storytelling, right? When you open it up for questions, it's that one person that you know is going to give a long intro story before they get to their question, or it's hard to even decipher a question. And look, some people are just more cognitive, right? And that's just the truth. But we can also equally ask them and just invite them in a gentle way to maybe pause for a moment, acknowledge the importance of what they're sharing, and as they're sharing that, to feel down in their body and see what they're noticing. Is there a sensation, an emotion, something here that wants to be seen? Sometimes that can help them kind of like slice through, but we could also ask them to feel in and see if there's a one-word essence about what they're sharing in this moment. And then from there, we could ask them if there's also a question. Now, again, we do this with skillfulness. We'd acknowledge that what they're sharing is, you know, important to them or important. But it helps them to describe what really needs to be heard, right? And just sometimes we only have a limited period of time, and that's just a fact. Then we have some students who want to fix and change another student in class. You've opened it up for questions and reflections during the debrief, and somebody has shared something really vulnerable, and next thing you know, the next person that raises their hand starts doing cross dialogue and is giving some advice to your other student, which isn't what we're doing in iREST, right? So hopefully, the next class, if that happened in my class, the next class, I would revisit welcoming everything as a messenger and that we're not trying to fix and change. To me, that would be an emerging theme, right? I wouldn't have to point it out. It wouldn't be embarrassing. I would do it in a way that it just seems like the next part of the theme of whatever I'm teaching in the next class. But one thing we can do when somebody is trying to fix or change another person's experience, it's really because they're uncomfortable with their own experience usually, right? Or they're just jumping into fixer mode, but a lot of times it's their own discomfort. So I would invite the person to reflect on what they're experiencing. Just take a moment, feel in. What are you experiencing right now after what Leandra had just shared? See how that just puts it back on them. Now they're in their own experience. And then we can invite them. Okay, now as you're sharing, I'm just going to invite you just to speak for yourself, to share from your firsthand experience. So we're gently getting them to move away from speaking for the other student in class because they may be having a completely different experience. And sometimes I've said that. And there's a way to do this skillfully that's not embarrassing or it's not judgmental. We just say, you know, I'll just say, you know, as you're sharing that, I'm just realizing that that may or may not be Leandra's experience. So I'd love to support you right now to see if you could see what's happening for you and then be able to share from your firsthand experience because I'm not going to call, you know, just for us as teachers, I'm not going to call Leandra out and ask her. That would put her on the spot. That's not right either. I'm going to take care of this. That's part of us and our leadership, that this may not be Leandra's experience. Now Leandra's off the hook. And how is this for you, Kelly? You know, or how is this for you, Joe, or how is this, whoever, you know? Okay. Then, did I already talk about monopolizing people that monopolize time during questions? kind of. Okay, well, this is a little different. I think I did storytelling. This is just somebody that just wants to monopolize, period, right? And so I'd invite them to reflect on their question before asking. And we can do this really skillfully because we can invite the whole group to reflect on their question before asking, right? Or if we know it's somebody who's been monopolizing and they're raising their hand first thing during the Q&A before or during the debrief after, I might just acknowledge by having eye contact, nodding my head, but still scanning the room. Or I may say, Elizabeth, I'm going to just give other people a chance for a moment and I'll get right back with you, right? So that way we're giving others a chance. Sometimes I'll say, and I haven't said this in this training, and my apologies that I haven't said it, but usually within a training, I'll say, I'll say it today for these last couple of sessions. If you're somebody who hasn't had a chance to come forward and bring your question forward, I invite you to do that. I want to hear from everyone. And that's true. And if it's not comfortable and you're at home and you're not comfortable, you can always do a direct message to Denny Shea and she can bring your question forward anonymously. We can also have, we do in the studio, we have a box here so that people could have dropped their question in there in case they want to do it anonymously. So that's something that we can do. And if we find that we can't manage somebody monopolizing in a lot of other ways, we could just have that box available and just end up having questions go there and then we could pull. I doubt you'll need to do that. Anyway, those are just some considerations for leadership challenges or working with disruptive individuals and storytelling. But, don't be afraid to just have a conversation with somebody after class if there's something that you need to work through and some boundaries that you need to establish that may not be sensitive to do in front of everyone, but we do it after class sometime. Any questions about that before I keep going? Okay. I have a few things that I'd like to talk about in regards to ethics when it comes to teaching. If an ethical issue arises for you, I just want to reiterate, please know that that's another reason that our ethics committee is there. They're there for you as teachers. So aside from a grievance, if you're needing some advice, they may refer you to a mentor. You know what I mean? It may be mentoring is there. And so supervision, mentoring, if an ethical issue comes up, you've got one of two things. If it's a larger issue, you could bring it to the ethics committee if you think it warrants a full review. But just know they may come back and say this, we suggest supervision. Or know that if something, that you're uncomfortable with, let's say you're sitting with somebody and they want to work with you one-on-one, and you just know that you're not going to be able, boundary-wise, to meet what it is that they're wanting to meet with. You've got a couple of options. You could either refer them to IRIS Institute, and we could get a mentor for them, somebody who's experienced, or you could, that's where you could seek mentorship so that you're getting supervision as a teacher of how to learn how to sit with and address what's happening for your student. Confidentiality and maintaining confidentiality, keeping files locked, making sure you have a waiver before your classes that people sign, where you ask certain questions and you have that legal liability waiver that they sign. These are all important ethical considerations. Making sure if somebody comes up to you after a class, that either if you're online, that everybody else is gone, or you schedule another time with them, or if it's in person, that you're speaking with them in a place where nobody else can hear, right? These are all considerations. Some of this I'm skimming because Jennifer's spoken about it. We don't have a formal waiver yet, but we're working on that. And then we'll be coming out with one. But please know that when, and we'll put those on the teacher resources, that would be free to everyone. But please know, in order to access the free teacher resources, you have to be logged into our website. But also, when we do that, which we will, we're not going to be able to put the legal aspect of the liability part of the waiver, because that varies state by state or province by province. So you would need to either see what's on a colleague, look at your local yoga studio's waiver, but really ultimately you should get it, probably have it looked at by an attorney that knows the laws of your state or your province. But I can tell you generally what I ask on my waiver, because I have a waiver for when I do one-on-one. When I teach in studios, I've used the studio waivers and intake forms. There's been one studio where I had a special intake form for my IRES class, but I always do an intake form for my one-on-ones, and I get general demographic information. I ask why they're coming for meditation now. What's their goal? If I ask them why, I'm getting their intention or their goal. I ask them their experience, if they have any experience of meditation or yoga and what that experience is. I ask them if they're actively using drugs or alcohol or any substances, and if so, how often. I ask them if they've been in therapy before, and if so, the outcome of that therapy. I ask them if they're taking medications. I ask them and what those are, if they have any, and I ask their experience in meditation. Oh, I ask their stress levels, their current stress levels, and what are their practices to reduce stress now? I have a really simple one. And then I use that for a more thorough, discussion when they come in. I think it's important ethically that if they're seeing a therapist or other practitioner, that we are consider ourselves part of a team that's working with this particular student of yours. And so there may be a time where we might need to sign a release of information and have contact with their therapist or their doctor or something like that. And I just let them know I'm available to do that if they'd like me to, right? I just want to remind you about the power differential one more time, that projection and transference exist, and they're going to project their power onto you. They're going to have transference that comes, that they project onto you. And they're there to learn, which puts them in a place where they need to understand something, which puts them in a vulnerable position. So we need to honor that and respect that. And what's so beautiful about our practice is we're pointing them back to themselves for the answers, right? So while we may answer some questions for them and we hold that, we're also holding the spirit of we know that they have something inside that they know the truth and the answer. So we're not trying to have power over our students. Let's see. I think I covered everything. That's amazing. I think that's pretty much the gist of it. Yay. So I'll hand it back over to you, Jennifer. Oh, well, all right. I did some of yours. Sorry, I did this. I was on a roll.
You were. It was beautiful. So I'd like to share a little bit about authenticity as teachers and share being able to share our personal material. If you feel like there's a theme that you're teaching to, and then you have a story maybe about your life or your experience of something that will help to elucidate the theme that you're trying to teach. It's something that sometimes we'll just need to feel into. There's definitely been times where I shared something and it felt like the timing was a little bit off, or it felt like I could feel the sharing was coming from a part of me that wanted, like, oh, I want to be seen, you know? So I really try to feel back into, like, what about what I want to share? Where is that coming from? And is it going to help to deepen the intimacy of what's being shared? I don't know if there's been so much work with, like, Brené Brown on vulnerability and how it really is a strength. And so being willing to share personal stories, it can be really helpful to class, but there can be a very vulnerable feeling. And you know, as if you're a beginning teacher or just starting out with this, it's you'll feel it if you're like, ooh, I think Brené Brown calls it the vulnerability hangover. You just shared something very, very personal and vulnerable. And then there's like the, oh, afterwards, why did I do that? but just to, then we can, you know, bracket that and meet it later in one of our practices. One of the things I do, even if I'm teaching a group practice, is often I'll have like a piece of paper maybe that has like the outline of what I want to teach. And when things, if things are arising for me, like something like when we were doing the dyad co-meditation where I was having a reaction to something, I also write that down when I'm teaching a group practice. If it's something that's coming up that's kind of pulling me away from the practice, I note that. And when we're sharing our personal material, that there can be that a really interesting thing to watch. Like, why am I sharing that? Where is it coming from? Is it going to deepen the intimacy or pull us out? Often when we're teaching, whether it's group or the dyad co-meditation, we might be receiving messages in whatever way, thoughts, ideas about what's happening in the students, or that a student or a client might be sharing something, and I'm like, oh, this is the heart chakra, and you know, I might be noticing all these different correlations just from all the different backgrounds of knowledge that I have, but I'm not sharing this unsolicited advice with the students. That's more of like just noticing happening, but then trying to be, again, very present with what the person or the group I'm with is sharing. So just notice, again, if you start to share like unsolicited messages you might be getting about certain people in the class or things like that, just watch where is that coming from. Is it the wanting to help, wanting to try to fix or change the other? And there can be a beautiful spontaneity to the stories, and I find that if we're sharing our personal material as a teacher, sometimes it just the perfect moment arises and out it comes. But it can be a really beautiful way to deepen what we're teaching, or elucidate the theme we're trying to get across. So, oh wow, I think we have more time. Stephanie, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that you did a beautiful job there on elucidating like the great intimacy that can open up. And hopefully if you've seen examples, I mean, Jennifer and I have each shared during the training, but it wasn't to put a focus on us. It was hopefully to deepen your understanding. It should always be in service of your students, of your clients. So I think that was a great overview. What we could do is open it up if there are any questions about anything we've talked about or any questions around group practice. We also have questions that have built up over the course of the last 4 or 5 days that we've been together, so we can go to those as well. But if there's something that's coming alive for anybody right now, maybe we could start there